Klondike centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flame.
Andrews put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get this hour going. It is Wednesday, April 10th. And this hour of Flames Talk's underway with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Okay, so we're in a really interesting spot with where the Flames are. Hi, Vix. How are we?
Any better and I'd be you.
We're in a very interesting spot with the Flames right now because... Look, it's tough season.
Yes.
A lot of difficult decisions had to be made.
Correct.
And they're going to miss the playoffs.
Fact.
And they've been eliminated from the playoffs far sooner than we're used to in this city. I know there's a lot of frustration with how the Flames have been this middling team, just good enough to miss or just good enough to sneak in, but never bad enough to get that high draft pick. I fully get that. But from what we do, from our perspective, it's a whole lot more energizing. Energizing is the wrong word because you get to cover hockey for a living. But like it's the topics and the things you talk about are far more ready-made when a team's in a playoff race into the 80s or when they're fighting. And the playoffs are the easiest time ever to do this job. You just show up and crack the mic. You don't need to do much prep. Talk about the game last night. Play some audio. Like it's just. Whereas now they've been eliminated with weeks to go in the regular season. And one of the things that I was taught quite some time ago, about a decade ago, it was I remember vividly. It's something that stuck with me the longest time. When Rob Kerr was like, you know, and this was off the air, but he just said to me once, like, you gotta, when you're in a situation like this where everybody knows the team's not good, you know, it behooves everybody to not just always dwell on the negative. Yeah, we could always be talking about, oh, the Flames lost. They don't have a lot of scoring. This is not good. This player is no good. Like, we could do that, but it's better for everybody if we accentuate more of the positives when things are negative. It makes the show a whole lot more fun to do. It makes fans potentially more interested in what they could see on the ice. So, yeah, we could talk about a lot of the things that are negative, but we've talked about those things for a good chunk of the season. Now we know they're missing. And so what I'm trying to figure out is we're about to talk about Andrei Kuzmenko, and we're about to talk about the really nice run he's on right now. He's got 11 points in his last six games on a six-game point streak, which ties a career high. And so I wanted to run this by you because I've gone from a pretty big Andrei Kuzmenko skeptic to, hold on a second, I'm all of a sudden pretty close to buying in on what this guy could be. And that's happened really quickly for me because when you learn the entire scope of what's happened with Kuzmenko, he went from getting here and joining the Flames and getting off to a good start, but very shortly into his Flames career, he was hit with a bad illness, and that illness lingered, and he hit him pretty hard. Plus, and I don't know if it was related to the illness or not, but for a number of weeks was playing through like a significant but temporary back thing. His back was seizing up, and because he was playing through that injury, really limited his effectiveness, limited his mobility. When you have a back that's seizing up like that and having, you know, really significant spasms, it was really tough for him to play through. Now both those things are behind him, and he's upped his conditioning, and that's one thing that he really committed himself to while that stuff was going on. And now he's been popped on this line with Kadri, and he looks like a completely different player. And so when you take into account the bigger picture, I'm like, hold on a second. I'm pretty close to buying in on this guy being a really interesting piece and a really key part of where they go in the future, either on the ice with them beyond next season or as a potential trade asset going into next year's trade deadline. So I just wanted to run that by you because I've pretty close to fully bought in on Andre Kuzmenko, and it's happened really quick.
Listen, you laid out a whole bunch of stats. You mentioned the 6-game point streak. 5 of those are multi-point games. He's now tied for the team lead in goals since being acquired from the Vancouver Canucks in the Elias Lindholm trade. I don't care that half his points are on the power play, 12 of 19 on the power play. I don't, because a goal on the power play counts the same as a goal at even strength, a goal shorthanded, so on and so forth. That said, he's still a little enigmatic for me, and I'm still a little skeptical on jumping on board of the Kuzmenko hype train, if you will, to the point where I think you and I might just trend into an interesting debate, because you've got sort of 1 foot on it and I've still got 2 feet off it. So I think we're coming from different perspectives. And to me, this is not at all similar to a Yegor Sharangovich extension conversation, because as it stands, Kuzmenko's...
By the way, I'm not suggesting an extension for Kuzmenko either. I'm not there.
Okay. No, I'm just saying from the long... Okay. From the longer term picture of Kuzmenko, best case scenario for the Calgary Flames is right now he's found money. I think we can agree, at least to some extent, he was a cap dump in that Elias Lindholm deal to make the money work. And he's been a reclamation project or whatever you want to call him. And he's most definitely inflated his value from when he was a part of that Lindholm deal to where he is now. And I think that's absolutely great for the Calgary Flames. And if there's a suitor in the offseason that comes and says, we really like what we saw out of Kuzmenko from mid-March on, and we'd like to make you what we think is a fair deal. And if you're the Calgary Flames and you think it's a fair deal, perfect. All you're doing is maximizing even further what you got for Elias Lindholm. And if that's not there yet and you go into the season with him next year and he gives you a lot of what he's given you over the course of the past 6 games, doesn't have to be to the tune of 11 points in 6 games, because that's not a sustainable pace, I don't think. I think we can both agree that that is going to come down at least at some point. But if he can continue to inflate his worth on the open market, on the trade market, that is perfect for the Calgary Flames and what I would be looking at if I were the GM of the Calgary Flames.
So I think it's important to point out that he's absolutely on a heater right now. He's
massive heater.
During this 6-game stretch, he's shooting at over 36%.
He's got to be a top 5 scorer in the NHL over this stretch. I'm going to assume. You're going to talk and I'm going to look it up
on
the fly.
So like you're shooting over 36%. Yeah, you're on a percentage heater on top of everything. But it's less about just the raw numbers, the 11 points in 6 games. That's awesome. But it's the fact that he's playing with a different pace. He's playing with different confidence. Even his back check in his defensive game hasn't been as frustrating over the last little bit. He just looks like it's the eye test meshed with the actual results and what you're seeing output wise that I'm like, hold on a second. So what exactly do the Flames have in this player, and what exactly have they acquired? What do you have for the numbers there?
Tied for 5th. So ahead of him is Kucherov, MacKinnon, Panarin, Stamkos, tied with Matthews, Kaprizov, McDavid, Mike Matheson. One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. Mike Matheson, how many points did he have in the 9-3 win? I wonder if that helped.
All 11 of his points have been assists, if you're curious.
Well, interesting. I guess what I'm saying is, I feel like, and we talked about this in hour one on the roundtable a little bit, I feel like Kuzmenko is the type of player that obviously is a power play specialist. You're going to have him on your power play going forward. But feels like they found him the right center. I think Kuzmenko is the type of guy that needs a play-driving center to really unlock him at 5-on-5 and make it so that the defensive shortcomings aren't as... Look, I mean, you can have defensive shortcomings as a winger, and they can be like, was Johnny... I know Johnny Gaudreau was in a Selke Trophy conversation, but was Johnny Gaudreau ever good defensively? No, absolutely not. That was not his strong suit. But because you had him with a player like Elias Lindholm on a line that was going out and pounding the opposition at the other end.
You don't have to be great at defense if you're spending all your time in the offensive zone.
Right? And so it helps mitigate those things fairly significantly. And you've got him playing with your best center in Nazem Kadri, and it feels like there's a little vibe there. Kadri's the type of guy that loves to carry the puck And Kuzmenko is a guy that loves to get it off his stick pretty quickly. And that's a good fit. And Kadri's skill level is high end. I don't think Kadri gets near enough credit for how highly skilled he is as a player. We talk about his edge. We talk about his two-way game. Talk about him being a tone setter. He also is just a really skilled player. That goal that he scored, that thing that he got upstairs in a heartbeat, the things that he does as he crosses the offensive blue line to help a team keep possession, he's a very skilled guy. I think
he's
that
smart.
Complements. He's also smart as a whip, too. But I just think that his skill set and all that he brings complements what Kuzmenko does as well. So you've got the right line fit for him. You've got him healthy. You've got him feeling good. I don't know. I just feel like maybe there is something here that longer than just a six-game heater. Let's not forget, while he shot over 27% as a first-year NHLer, he still scored 39 goals. And I you don't do that by accident. And yeah, the more down-to-earth or more realistic shooting percentage, maybe he never gets to 39 again, but would it be crazy for him to be a 25 or 30 goal guy with the Flames next year? I don't think so. Over a full season, I don't think that's crazy at all, because he's going to be one of the guys they count on most for offense. He's going to see heavy PP one time. I'm really wondering if they've got something that could be a nice asset for them going forward.
Well, he's got
asset on the ice beyond next season or as a trade chip.
He's got 10 goals in 24 games since joining the Flames. So that includes the period of time where he was sick, where he had back issues, as you mentioned, where he's had to work on his conditioning. That's still a 34 goal pace. Now, granted, you mentioned he shot 27.3% in 81 games with the Vancouver Canucks as a rookie last season. In his 24 games with Calgary, he's still shooting 22.2. So he's still shooting the lights out in terms of shots versus goals. And over the course of an 82-game schedule, is that going to necessarily be sustainable to the point where he's able to reach 34 again? I don't know. But
39.
It still makes sense that this guy can be a goal scorer. I'm just still not fully on that bandwagon, because I still see things like the no-look, blind, spinning back pass to nobody. And it's a double-edged sword with him, and you have to take the good with the bad. And he makes those plays because more often than not, they happen to be working for him at this time. So if you're feeling it and you're on a six-game point streak with five multi-point games and 11 points in total, you're afforded the opportunity to take those chances and make those mistakes because you're connecting more often than not. I'm just still over in the lukewarm section of the hot spring, whereas I think you're gradually getting into the point where you're ready to jump into the 105 degree. I don't even know what they are. I'm just ballparking. I'm guessing.
I think that would boil you alive, 105 degrees.
Just Celsius? Stop.
Definitely
No,
Celsius.
I'm sorry. I mean Fahrenheit, but 105 does?
I don't know, but it feels hot. Look, my question, the crux of the conversation is, what if the cap dump in the Lindholm trade turns out to be a really useful player for you too?
Bonus.
Like, what if the guy that only came back because the Canucks needed to make the money work, and you also got Brustevich and Yermo and a first-round pick and a conditional pick, what if you also have a guy that really helps you here over the next number of years? And you're like, oh, okay, maybe a two-year extension after. And again, I'm not ready to do that yet. I need to see lots more of this from Kuzmenko because of the consistency knocks. It's just what we're seeing right now. The guy is an impact maker.
Oh,
he
yeah.
can, in the offensive zone, he can control a hockey game and he can do things. The skill that he has, it doesn't exist in a lot of guys on this Flames team right now.
Most of them. Let's
be
honest.
It's not a knock. It is what it is.
He's a top three skill player on the Calgary Flames right now. I don't think there's any disputing that in terms of what he's able to do with the puck on his stick, the vision that he has, the way that he can both set up and finish. The Calgary Flames don't have a lot of these guys. So if the kicker to the deal in order to make the salary work both ways suddenly becomes an impact player like he has over the course of the half dozen games, and if he's able to translate that for the remaining five of the season and carry that, again, not carry it over, because I don't think you're carrying the momentum over 5 months into October, but if you're able to do some of those same things again, if you're Kuzmenko, from a Calgary Flames perspective, that just makes that deal even better for you.
I'm starting to get closer and closer to buying in. Yet there is that part of me in the back of my brain saying it's still down the stretch hockey with no pressure and on a non-playoff team. And true, that's why I'm like, okay, I guess where I've gotten to is that I am way more optimistic about what Kuzmenko could be going into next season. And I'm really interested to see what a full training camp and a fully healthy Andre Kuzmenko, with the knowledge that you've got a nice fit with him and Nazem Kadri going into next year. I'm curious what 82 games or the first 4 months of a season or however long he's here, I'm really curious what that could bring for him and what type of conversations we're having next season about this player. That's I guess that's where I've gotten to. And while I'm not going to be able to fully buy in right now because of the circumstances, it's just so much more encouraging than where things were before.
Well, and it's fun too. If you're just a fan watching the game and you're seeing a player like Andre Kuzmenko make two or three absolute highlight reel plays a game, which he has done over the course of this half dozen games, then all the better for it. The entertainment, at the end of the day, it's an entertainment business. And there are few players on the Calgary Flames right now as entertaining as Kuzmenko. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, okay, well, he's not great defensively and so on and so forth. You're allowed to be a one-dimensional player if your one dimension is producing offense the way he has of late.
Few texts at 960-960 and kind of running the gamut on the spectrum here. It says, Kuzmenko plays great when there's no pressure. This reads, Canucks fan here and watch Kuzmenko a lot. Super fun to watch and top of the league for skill, but fits the stereotype perfectly. His best stretches on the Canucks were when they were losing. It's just how he is. Not a guy that's going to win you games, but he's fun to watch if you're already planning on losing. Mike writes, outside of some decent back checks from time to time, Johnny was a pretty terrible defender. This from Bill in Calgary, who says, isn't Kuzmenko supposed to be a really good guy and well-liked in the locker room? Indeed, he brings a lot of that energy and that enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm's the
always
word I would
smiling,
use, yeah.
Really enjoys playing the game, that type of stuff. This says, from Dylan and Revy, what edge, what two-way game. Kadri isn't half the player you seem to think he is. Kuzmenko, on the other hand, is a stellar offensive player. The Flames have several two-way forwards and not enough actually offensively elite talent. Having one guy that cheats is okay when you've got 10 or 11 guys who would rather play defense up front. Now, Dylan and I on different pages when it comes to Kadri and his season and the type of player Kadri is, but that for a team that is going to remain offensively challenged, I think, here for the next number of years, having a guy like Kuzmenko around isn't the worst thing in the world.
Well, at the end of the day, the Calgary Flames are going to need somebody to put the puck into the net or somebody to pass it to somebody who can tap it into the net. And for me, if you just are judging on pure offensive skill, I don't know necessarily if there's a player on the current roster right now that I would rank ahead of Kuzmenko in terms of his vision, ability to stick handle, shot, the whole sort of complete game when it comes to the offensive side of the puck.
Just a quick, great text, by the way, at 960-960. Just a quick deviation from the Flames, because I think it is important that we touch on this for a few minutes, because there is a significant situation developing in the NHL right now. Like, Vix, we might be just over a week away from the Arizona Coyotes no longer existing and them being moved to Salt Lake City, Utah. With some of the reporting that's out there from Frank and Elliot, at this point, I'd be surprised if we're not talking about an official announcement of the Coyotes being renamed and relocated and playing in Salt Lake City. This has gone from 0 to 100 in a heartbeat.
24 hours?
Yeah.
If that?
Well, Frank joined us on Tuesday's right. show, talked a little bit about it, said they're kind of concurrently making schedules and going forward with both options in mind. And now one day later, it's, yeah, this thing is an overdrive. And this reminds me very, very, you know, there was a lot of back channeling done by David Thompson and Mark Chipman in Winnipeg when they were putting together their relocation bid to bring the Thrashers there. But that was very behind the scenes and wasn't really out in the open. Then all of a sudden it was Stephen Brunt's reported they're moving to Winnipeg. And you're like, what? And then a week later, they're moving to Winnipeg. And this has got that feel. You're like, we've known, the only difference is that we've known that the Coyotes are a mess for 20 years now. And now finally there's some urgency to get them the hell out of there. And it feels like the revenue loss and honestly, I don't think the, I'm trying to think of the right word, the optics of playing in a college arena,
which I know you love.
I think the NHL finally has been like, okay, this can't continue. We can't have a team bringing in that little revenue because they're only playing to 4,500 fans. We can't continue having games on television as one of the four major sports leagues being played in a minor league barn. No offense to Mullet Arena. It's not an NHL arena.
It's a great facility for college hockey.
It is so Mickey Mouse that the National Hockey League has played two seasons, 82 games in that building. That is like, it's inexcusable for that to continue. And even if they win this land auction, we're still talking about years and years playing in front of 4,500 fans. It makes your league look awful. You're supposed to be one of the four. And I know, like, feels like different leagues have them. You know, there's Oakland in the majors. That's a bit of a, like, oh, that doesn't look so good when there's 27 people watching at the Coliseum. But, like, get them the hell out of Arizona. And I'm not even saying that the market is never fixable. But, like, this franchise there right now, it's not working. Get them somewhere that wants them. Get them somewhere where they have a facility and where the NHL's going to make some money off of it.
It does feel like we're progressing to a point where for hockey to flourish in Arizona, you have to almost take a step back and then wait a duration of time and then take that step forward again. And you, I don't think it's with the Coyotes branding. I don't think it's with the Coyotes current setup, because clearly what they've been trying to do over the course of, well, you called it 20 years, but even more
frequently.
Was it not
the Jerry Moyes stuff? Was that not 2006?
I'm going to defer to you on that.
I feel like the first time the NHL took over that team, the wheels started in motion back in 2006 off the top of my head, maybe a couple years later. But we're like at 15, 20 years of this being an absolute mess in.
Well, and it was accelerated by the fact that the city of Glendale is like, you know what? We're okay. We've got a facility for sure. We're just going to.
Yeah.
We're going to let that park for a little while. We'll have concerts and monster truck rallies and rodeos.
Yeah.
I think it has to be a situation where you take a step back. And if it's a market you want to revisit, you have to do it under different circumstances.
If you want to go expansion there, and I believe if you go read Elliot and Frank's reporting, there is if this ends up going through, they'll have some clause in place that gives the current owner of the Coyotes the opportunity to bring an expansion team back in 5 years if certain conditions are met. But for now, what more evidence do you need that the Coyotes are not? Even if they were to build, everybody's like, well, Scottsdale, Canadians, it would work there. You can't even sell me that it would work if you built a brand new facility in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it's a great town, awesome vibe. You know, there's lots to suggest that it's a good place to think about, but not with the Coyotes brand. It feels like you need a complete and utter reset in that market. And now you've got this billionaire in Utah who's like, hey.
Soliciting team names?
Well, not only that, but like is willing to go through the proper channels to, as Frank Saravalli said on Tuesday's show, kiss the ring. You have to do things. Ask Jim Balsillie how that went, right? You have to go through certain protocols. It takes time. So Ryan Smith in Utah has gone about this the right way. And has the money to be able to bring a team in. What are they saying? $1.2
billion? $1.3, I thought.
Was it $1.3? Over $1 billion is what this is going to cost to buy the Coyotes and pay the relocation fee, which then gets distributed to the 32 franchises or 31 franchises. It's all right there for you. And it's a market that I think would work. It's one of the more underserved markets in North America. You got your basketball team. And that's it. You got some college teams that do well. But in terms of the major pro sports, that's an underserved market. I think it would work really well. Keep them in the Central Division. There it is. It seems like a ready-made fix for you.
I have no objection to the thought process. I'm just curious of how quick this moves from here on.
They say April 18th is when this might be done. It's April 10th. It's just over a week from now with my crack mask.
I was going to say 8 days if I'm carrying the one properly.
Yeah. Anyway, I hope it happens, to be perfectly honest with you. I think it needs to happen, and I think it's best for the league to get that team out of Arizona. It's Pat and Aaron along with you. We're coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Wet basement? They have a lasting solution to keep your basement dry. If you experience any water in your basement, contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time to go inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op, where life's in store. It's Steinberg along with you as we continue along on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. And boy, is that Pacific Division playoff race as clear as mud, eh? There is still a ton to figure out when it comes to the Pacific Division. First place still up for grabs. On top of that, the number three seed or the number one wild card very much up for grabs. And when we talk to Pacific Division, we say hello to our Pacific Division insider. It's time to check in with Jonathan Davis from NHL Network and NHL Network Radio. Hello, JD.
How are you, Pat? You know, I thought I stopped taking algebra back in high school.
All these permutations, though. It's all these, if X happens, then Y.
Right.
Quadratic equations, all the things that... This is the reason we got into sports. I thought addition and subtraction was all I needed to know. Where the heck are we right now? If you were to go look at it right now, you've got the LA Kings sitting number three in the Pacific at 93 points. Vegas sitting at number four at 92 points. Both teams have yet to officially clinch, but that seems like a formality at this point. Kings have the one game in hand, 1 point back of LA. And each team is battling right now for either the three seed in the Pacific or the number one or number two wild card spot, depending on how things play themselves out. How do you read this one, JD? What's not even who's going to finish where, but you know what it means for playoff matchups and how that shapes up.
You know what, Pat? It might as well be like reading Chinese or any foreign language to me right now, because I can't read it. I can't. Look. Last night for me, you know, I did the Ice Cap show. We had, 13 games last night. When I was done last night, finally, after finishing up some work at around 1 a.m., I've never fallen asleep that quickly. My head is spinning. It is great. Like, we're not doing brain surgery here, but I can't figure it out. I don't even try to, because, you know, when I thought I even had the LA Kings figured out, they go and lay an egg against Anaheim last night. So don't bother trying to figure it out. You're just going to have to let it play out.
Is there a better option? Like, you know, is it better to finish three in the Pacific? Is it better to be in a wild card spot? That's another really interesting wrinkle in this whole conversation.
Well, I think the best spot to be is wild card one, because of all the teams that you're going to, you know, if you're LA, Vegas, or Nashville, I think you want to play Vancouver. I mean, I think, you know, like, sorry, but I think that's, you know, I don't want to have to go against Connor and Leon in round one. I don't want to have to go against Jake Oettinger and you know, the 820 goal scorers and 625 goal scorers in Dallas. You know, I don't want to do that. So, you know, and not that Vancouver, it's a rollover. You know, they've played some better games of late. I mean, even the game they lost in LA on the weekend, you know, they played a good game. They didn't come out with the result. They had, you know, it looked like they were going to be blown off the doors when they played Vegas, you know, a couple of nights ago, and, you know, two goals on two shots for Vegas. And then, you know, it was 4-3 Vancouver at the end of the night. So it's, yeah, but at the end of the day, I just think that's probably, you know, if I got my choice between Dallas Edmonton or Vancouver.
Right.
I'm picking Vancouver.
Yeah, and it's funny. If the playoffs were to start right now in the Western Conference, it would be Dallas playing Vegas. It would be a rematch of what, the 2020 bubble Western Conference final. You'd have Colorado, Winnipeg. Vancouver would be playing Nashville, and then Edmonton, L.A. for a third straight year. That's what the Western Conference playoff matchups would look like. So curious to see, because I hate throwing shade at Vancouver, because they've had such a great year, and we'll get into them a little bit later on, but they might be the team that I would be most interested in playing, and has nothing to do with what they are as a team, but of all the teams that you could face in this conversation, they're the one with the least playoff experience. Edmonton's been there, done that. LA's been there, done that. Dallas, we know. Like, Vancouver's kind of the new kid on the block, right?
Well, they are. Now, they've got the thing that, you know, When Vancouver was going so well, what one of the things that made them so good, one of their best players were playing like their best players. And, you know, you've got a guy like JT Miller who will, you know, I always like to say it, he'll run over his mother to win a game. They've just got guys on that team that are just pain in the rears to play against. And that's the one thing that, one of the things that makes them a really good team when they're playing their best, along with the fact now, Thatcher Demko's been out for a while. I think Elliot has talked about the fact that they're targeting the weekend for him. So he's going to, you know, that doesn't give him a lot of time to get himself ready for the playoffs. So that's an unknown. That is a big unknown come playoff time, is not just the health of Demko, but he's got a kind of, you know, it's kind of like spring training, preseason all over again for him.
Yeah.
At the hardest time of the year.
What you mentioned it, and maybe we can start as we go team by team. We'll go right into Vancouver. You mentioned Demko, and that's good news. And they feel like, I know that the Canucks feel like Demko coming back and missing the time that he has really gives him the opportunity to be fresh and where they need him to be come playoff time from a wear and tear standpoint. So that's good news from a Vancouver standpoint. But you mentioned it, you know. Last week when we were talking about the Canucks, you talked a lot about their lack of quality wins here over the last little bit. That win over Vegas, that was a quality win, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that snapped a streak of, you know, six consecutive losses to teams that, you know, are in a playoff spot. And, yeah, and you think about, look, you know, you had Besser getting his 40th that night. JT Miller hit the 100-point mark. Connor Garland was Vancouver's best player on the ice that night. And Artur Sliloš, you know, after the first two shots kind of settled in and played a good game. But, you know, that was a big win. You know, sometimes I've heard coaches talk about the fact that, you know, you're going through a bad stretch, but you end up playing really well and lose. And then that's where you start to see the turning point. So maybe that game in Los Angeles, you know, a Saturday ago, what could have been their turning point, because they really felt that coming off that game in Vegas where they were just awful, that the game in Los Angeles was a game where they started to right the ship, and then, you know, they come home and they do what they did to the Golden Knights in coming back from down 2-0 and 3-2 and win that game 4-3.
Jonathan Davis, our Pacific Division insider, NHL Network, NHL Network Radio, joining us here on Flames Talk as he does on Wednesdays, joining us inside hockey. Okay, Oilers seem like they still have an outside shot of tracking down the number one seed in the Pacific Division, 5 back of Vancouver with 2 in hand, but right now, more likely locked into the number 2 seed. What do we know about McDavid? What do we know about Connor and his status? It sounds like a minor thing that's going to keep him out here for the next little bit.
Well, I know he's a really good player. You're saying, what do we know about McDavid? He's really good.
He has 99 assists. I don't know if you've heard that. 99 assists.
No, that's pretty, pretty good. Yeah, I mean, look, guy sits out 2 days of practice. He's a guy that I think, you have to hide his skates, and you better hide them really well, because he'll probably find a pair somewhere and get on if he can. So, you know, him missing a couple of days of practice is telling. And so, yeah, I guess, you know, look, rest him. I mean, I think they're pretty, you know, I think they feel that, you know, maybe, you know, their chance now at getting first doesn't look as good. They still have a game against Vancouver, but, you know, ultimately, as Jonathan Marchessault said in that piece that Mark Spector did today for Sportsnet.ca, like, be careful what you wish for. Like, don't worry about it. You're gonna have to beat three good teams, you know, along the way to get there. So, you know, if you're Edmonton, just like what Vancouver's doing with Demko, make sure your best players are ready for game 83.
Yeah. Okay. In Vegas, what do we know about, well, first of all, where are we? What have we liked? What have our observations been on Tomas Hertl?
Well, I thought it was a really impressive performance. You know, Bruce Cassidy talked the day before the game about, you know, they're going to ease him in. Well, he played the third most minutes amongst forwards, played 20 minutes that night, started off on the wing, but man, he won a lot of key draws down the stretch. I think he was like 6-3 or 7-2 on the night, and they had him out in the final couple of minutes and won a couple of key draws. He's parked in front of the net. He had a chance at tying the game on a redirection shot. He looked really good. He's killing penalties. He's playing the power play. It was a very impressive debut for Tomas Hertl, and something that, you know, for the Golden Knights to be excited about. And, you know, we're still waiting to hear about what's happening with Mark Stone. But yeah, it was good to see. Now, the other thing with Vegas is Aiden Hill,
yep,
gets the start tonight. And, you know, I think it's a big one for him. I thought in some ways, I found, like, Logan Thompson, to me, when you watch him play, he seems to guess a lot. And a lot of times he guesses right. Aiden Hill, you know, prior to getting hurt, looked like he was really fighting it. And so I'm interested to see, you know, what we get from Aiden Hill tonight. But he's a competitor, and he wants that number one spot back again. It's a good problem for Vegas to have if both goalies are going well. Look, they're going to need both these guys come playoff time.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But the Hurdle, I would give him, you know, I'd give him an A-, maybe even an A for that debut against Vancouver.
Not a bad debut at all. What?
Yeah, and an assist. He had an assist as well. I mean, won a face-off to set up, I think it was the Noah Hanifin goal. You know, there you go. Think about that goal. That goal was Hanifin from Eichel and Hurdle.
Homegrown Golden Knights.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Part of the misfits. Speaking of Stone, you mentioned, like, still a guessing game as to whether or not he's going to be ready for round one, round two. It feels still very much like a guessing game with that situation.
I mean, look, it's been, you know, about almost 2 weeks since I've been in Vegas. So, you know, as I said to you, when I was there, you know, 2 weeks ago, he hadn't even skated yet. So, you know, he's around the team, but that's about it.
Yeah.
I think we're looking, you know, if they make it to round two, then, you know, that's more likely. The idea of him coming back in round one, unless it's a long series, I don't know. I mean, there's no indication right now to think that he'd be coming back.
JD, let's finish in Los Angeles, your stomping grounds, and where you're most tied in. And you mentioned a little earlier, just when you start to figure out the Kings, they go out and they lose to the dreadful Ducks. What did we see in that loss?
Well, we just saw a team that just didn't seem interested. I mean, they jump out to a 1-0 lead. And then after that, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what I saw that night. I mean, it's a little mind boggling. And to me, you know, we've talked about it throughout the year, Pat. This is where leadership, you know, this is where you need your guys to step up. And that's the concern. And maybe LA is just on cruise control. They know they haven't officially clinched, you know, they're pretty comfortable with knowing that they're in the playoffs, and maybe they don't care. I don't know what it is. Or maybe it's, you know, the fact that they played Anaheim and, you know, they felt that was going to be a rocking chair game. Look, when Calgary comes to town for Saturday night, like, I think we're going to see a better version of the team, because I think Calgary will push them. And I don't think they got necessarily pushed by Anaheim. I think they were lulled to sleep at times. And, you know, then one of the other things for LA, Quinton Byfield, I don't know if he's hurt or he's just exhausted, but it's now, I think it's 16 games without a goal. You know, that line with him and Kempe and Kopitar, Kempe and Kopitar have continued to flourish. But Byfield, while he's still playing really well, and he looks like the guy from last year that's more the guy that's doing all the heavy lifting, you know, digging pucks out and helping the other guys. And he still, and he only has a handful of assists, but and last night, Pat, he played 11 minutes. Like that's Pierre-Luc Dubois territory.
Hmm. Is there an argument if he has hit a wall? Like, do they, once they clinch, is he a candidate to maybe get a game or two off and see if you can give him just a little rest before the playoffs?
I mean, I haven't asked anybody about it. I will when I go Saturday night. I don't know if Calgary's here Thursday.
Calgary's Thursday, yeah. Tomorrow. I didn't want to correct.
Okay, Calgary's
your
Thursday.
Your point still remained.
Okay. So I'm doing the show tomorrow night, so I'm going to be, you know, surrounded by, you know, 13 games again, I think, tomorrow night. So when I go Saturday, I'm going to ask and try to get a sense from people, is he hurt or is it something where he's just gassed?
Okay.
I'm interested to see what happens. I'm interested to hear what the reaction is, but you know, look, they're, like I said, you know, I've said it all year, Pat, like I don't even bother. It's like the rest of the division. I don't bother to figure it out because it just, none of it makes any sense. Like it just doesn't, I can't figure out this team. So I'm not going to try now to do it. They are the enigma. They're a team, Pat, that when like everybody, there's very little margin for error with this roster. So if they're not all going, they're not good enough. They all have to be going. Like they just, you know, they don't have to play the game of their lives, but they all have to be going. And there's just lapses, too many lapses with this team. So we'll see. Maybe the playoffs, the narrative changes. But, well, I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens who they face. I mean, I would love it to be Edmonton just because to be able to, anytime you get to watch Connor and Leon, you know, live, it's a phenomenal thing. So we'll see where it goes. But I wouldn't mind watching Dallas either. They're a machine, and I love the fact that that the tenant is, Wyatt Johnston is leading the team in scoring. He's leading his landlord, Joe Pavelski. I don't know, is that allowed?
Yeah, you might have to gear it down just to make sure that he can rectify things before the end of the season, right?
Well, unless that's his way of contributing to the rent, that you know he's got to produce that. Maybe Joe gives him a deal that if you can outscore me, you know, I'll give you a better deal on rent.
You get the sense in this city, and this city is at times a little Abe, anybody but Edmonton. You get the sense in this city from Flames fans, they'd much rather Edmonton face Vegas than Los Angeles. I'd say that's the sense that I get from Flames fans, that the number one rival who what's that?
Because Edmonton's would lose to Vegas and would beat LA.
They've got a very, it feels like with how they have beat LA the last two years, it feels like that has a chance of the Oilers advancing. And a lot of people in this market would love to see that not be the case.
Well, I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that. Yeah. I hear you.
I don't know where we're going to be in a week's time. When we speak next week, we'll be up on the final day of the regular season. It'll be the eve of the end of the regular season 1 week from when we're talking right now. And I still don't know if the Pacific Division will be figured out and if we'll have a definitive idea as to who's playing who. That's how close this thing is. That's how much this thing is going to go down to the wires. So looking forward to seeing where we are next week, JD. Appreciate the time, as always, my friend.
All right, bud. Have a good one. We'll talk in a week.
Okay, will do. Jonathan Davis is our Pacific Division insider. He joins us inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Cal and Gary. Top products curated for Calgarians, and we mean every single one of you. Only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today. Yes, indeed. Today's Wednesday, April 10th. It is April 18th, the final day of the regular season. The playoffs start, the Saturday, the 20th is when the playoffs begin. So we are right near the end, and I know it, but like it doesn't feel like it at the same time. My brain knows that we're near the end of the regular season, and
but
it's almost over.
But your heart wants it to go on.
Well, yes, absolutely.
I should have said my heart. Your heart will go on.
That'll do it for the program. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Thanks to Cam and Cam only for producing this hour. No, thanks to Cam. Shan's right beside me. That's what I said. Thanks to Cam and Shan for knocking it out of the park as always. This hour of Flames Talk's been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.